Olá, boa noite, bem-vindos a uma noite de gala no Conversa. Dois livros desse cara com quem a gente vai conversar foram lançados no Brasil no ano passado. Somos inteligentes o bastante para saber quão inteligentes são os animais? E O Último Abraço da Matriarca. Mas o livro mais importante de nosso convidado dessa noite, o primeiro dele, de 1982, até hoje não foi traduzido no Brasil. E foi este livro que abalou para sempre não só o mundo das ciências biológicas, como os da política, da antropologia e da psicologia. Chimpanzee Politics. A política dos chimpanzés, fruto de décadas de observação do comportamento social de um grupo de chimpanzés na maior colônia de primatas do mundo, num zoológico na Holanda, um cativeiro tão grande que reproduz condições silvestres. O que se viu demonstrado nesse livro foi que as relações de poder, organização e hierarquia do grupo de chimpanzés são iguais à política dos humanos. Baseiam-se em disputas pela liderança, alianças e coalizões, dissimulações e traições. Em suma, os símios agem como leitores ou personagens de Maquiavel. O autor desses livros é o maior primatologista vivo, é provável que seja o maior de todos os tempos. A primatologia estuda os primatas, quer dizer, dos macaquinhos aos grandes símios. Desses, nossos parentes mais próximos são os chimpanzés e os bonobos, com quem temos pelo menos 96% de genes em comum. Assim como o retrato da política dos chimpanzés nos fez entender melhor nossos parlamentos e todas as nossas sociedades, agora esse cientista extraordinário aplicou seu conhecimento para que possamos compreender, afinal, quais são as diferenças entre sexo e gênero e gêneros e gêneros. O livro chama-se Diferente. Gênero pelos olhos de um primatologista. Vai ser lançado no Brasil só no ano que vem, mas o seu autor topou antecipar muitas das revelações e conclusões a que chegou agora, aqui, pra gente. Franz Deval. Hello, senhor Franciscos. Very nice talking to you.
Nice seeing you.
Nice to see you. It's quite an honor. Talking about apes, the fact that you cannot ask questions to them, to our ape relatives, is it a handicap or an advantage?
I think it's a plus, because I don't trust people. People answer questions, but you never know what they're saying. So you may ask them questions about what they eat or their sex life.
Who they vote for?
You think you get honest answers? I'm not sure. With humans, I don't trust it at all. And there's actually some good studies that indicate that when you put people under pressure, they give different answers. So I prefer the primates, just watching their behavior.
But did you decide to study the apes because you wanted to know best about humans?
No, I'm in general an animal lover. I love all sorts of animals, and I could have worked with different animals, but I ended up in the primates. And of course, the big advantage with the primates is that the connection with human behavior is much easier to make. So for if you popularize books like I do, then that's an easier task.
What does Charles Darwin mean when he states that, as you quote, I think it's in the book, How Intelligent We Are, the mental distance between man and superior animals is a difference of degree, not of type. What is this type of intelligence that Darwin refers to?
Well, people have the impression that they are different from animals. Some people even believe that they are not animals, which for a biologist is very strange because we have lungs and hearts and brains. And so, of course, we are animals. And so they also believe that the human mind is something special. The human mind is totally separate from the animal mind. And I think what Darwin was saying, and I agree with that, is that you cannot draw a line. You can maybe say that humans are more intellectually capable or they have language. You can point at certain things that we are special in, but you cannot say that we have a different mind, a radically different mind.
Regretfully, your first and outstanding book, Chimpanzee Politics, was never published in Brazil. So I would like to ask you to synthesize to the main breakthroughs of the book to our Brazilian audience. Would you do it in a minute?
The reason it's called Chimpanzee Politics is because in some animals, like the chimpanzee, the positions in the hierarchy, the pecking order, are not decided by who is the strongest necessarily. So in chickens, where we have the pecking order, it is the biggest, meanest chicken who is going to be at the top. In chimpanzees, you need supporters. It's a coalition system, like in humans. So you cannot reach the top without supporters. So for a male, for example, to be the alpha male, he needs female support. He needs a few friends who help him. And as a result, sometimes the smallest male can be the alpha male because he doesn't need to be the biggest and the strongest. So it's a political system. It also means that the alpha male needs to pay back his supporters. He needs to help them. He needs to be tolerant with them and friendly with them. Otherwise, they may start supporting somebody else. So it's really a political system.
So because the expression alpha male was coined by you in Chimpanzee Politics, and usually people think that the power of alpha male is founded in violence, but it's not. It's coalitions and the support of females. This is key.
Yes. So alpha male is a term that we use for the highest ranking male. Alpha female we use for the highest ranking female. But in the public mind, the word alpha has gotten a negative connotation. People have started to talk about alphas like bullies, like you need to be violent and nasty, and that's the alpha male. And some alpha males are like that. I don't deny that they exist, but most alpha males that I've known, they come up for the underdog, they defend the weak in the society, they break up fights, they keep the group together. So they have a positive function, they have a real leadership function, and as a result, they can become immensely popular. They become more popular than almost anyone else in the group as a result of being a good leader.
In Chimpanzee Politics, we learned that for chimps, as important as winning a fight is to reconciliate as soon as possible. How do they do it and why?
So chimpanzees, they reconcile with kissing and embracing. Bonobos, who are equally close to us as chimps, they do it with sexual behavior. Every animal, actually, elephants do it, dolphins do it. Every animal has a different style of doing it, but they do need to come together to repair the relationship because the relationships are very important to them. So people always think that it's individual competition, a sort of capitalist model of primate society. But, you know, the primates are not really individualists. They are cooperators. And so they have a lot of friends and family, and they need to keep the peace with them. And if they have a fight with them, which sometimes happens, you know, I'm from a big family, and anyone who comes from a big family knows how to do this. We need to, we have a big fight, and then we reconcile. That's how life is, you know.
Even lazy jellyfish do it, as Cole Porter would sing. But let's see an illustration of this, not among the chimpanzees, but in a group of bonobos. So what exactly went on there, and how does it relate to us?
Well, these are bonobos who live at the Lola Sanctuary, and they get food thrown at them sometimes in the river. And so then one of them picks up the food, the other one fights with him, so that was a little fight over the food. And then immediately they reconciled with some sexual behavior. That's typical bonobos. Bonobos reconcile very quickly.
Why do people say that bonobos are the ape hippies? Is make love, not war a bonobo slogan?
Yeah, bonobos are very erotic. They have sex in all partner combinations, not just male-female. They have sex in all positions that you can imagine, even some positions that you probably cannot imagine, because they can do it hanging upside down, you know, things like that. So they have sex, they have a lot of sexual behavior, and the sex serves social relationships. The most important sex for bonobos is female to female, because they have a sisterhood, the females support each other, the females are collectively dominant over the males, And so all that support between the females is made possible by the close bonds that they have, and the sex helps with that.
And I hear that they have the largest clitoris in the animal kingdom, along with the dolphins.
Yeah, so dolphins also have a lot of sex that has nothing to do with reproduction, a lot of social sex. And yeah, the dolphins also have a large clitoris, yeah.
It is widely accepted that we humans descend from the violent chimpanzees, not from the easygoing, the sexy and pacific, peaceful bonobos. Is this true? Is this precise?
This is a misunderstanding. The bonobo and the chimpanzee are exactly equally close to us genetically. And so they're exactly equally relevant. But anthropologists over the generations, over the last couple of hundred years, they have created this idea that humans evolved as warriors and hunters and aggressive and men dominating women. And we conquered the world basically by eliminating everybody else. And so the chimpanzee fits in that idea because chimpanzees are aggressive and territorial. And so they fit very well with this thinking. The bonobo, who is more peaceful and female-dominated, doesn't fit. And so the scientists have decided that they don't like the bonobo and they try to marginalize them. But I think that's nonsense. We are, after all, a very sexy species. We are a very erotic species, like the bonobo. We often forget that because we don't like to talk about it, but we are. And so we can learn a lot of things from bonobos. Also, for example, all the female bonding that is, I think, also typical for humans. There's a lot of female bonding going on.
And what about emotions? Do bonobos, chimps, and humans share the same range of emotions?
I usually think that the emotions are a bit like our organs in the body. I don't have any organ in my body that you don't find in a dog. I have a heart and lungs and brains and kidneys and reproductive organs. I have all the same organs as a dog. And I think for the emotions, it's basically the same. I have all the same emotions as every mammal. Maybe in humans, some emotions are more developed and sophisticated and elaborated as possible. But in principle, I think we have the same emotions going.
And do they express the emotions in their faces as we do?
Yeah, that's the beauty of the primates. You know, my professor, when I was a student, he was a specialist of facial expressions. The muscles in the face of a chimpanzee or bonobo are exactly the same as in our face. People sometimes think that we must have more muscles because we have more subtle expressions. But actually, the apes have the same muscles in the face and can give the same scale of expressions. So yes, they can express all these emotions in their face with smiling and laughing and looking angry. All these expressions occur.
I'm going to show an example. Could you tell us what is going on? What this chimp is expressing? Yawning.
Yeah, this is an experiment that we did at Yawn Contagion. We show video clips to them on a little iPod of yawning chimps. So these apes are looking at yawning colleagues and they start to yawn.
Just like us, contagious.
Yeah, it's a form of empathy. You empathize with the other, and they do it more with individuals that they know. If you show them videos of chimps that they know, they do it more than with strangers. And that's true for humans also. We have a lot more empathy for the individuals around us, our friends, our family, than for people who are strangers.
Last year, the instant classic Mama's Last Hug was released in Brazil. And O Último Abraço da Matriarca, The Last Hug of the Matriarch. And let us show our viewers the very starting point of the book, a certain hug that took place in Burgers Zoo in the Netherlands in 2016. So, could you tell us a bit about these two friends?
Yeah.
The biologist, Jan van Hoof.
This is Mama, the chimpanzee. She's 59 years old. And Jan van Hoof, my professor, who is 80 years old. And she was dying. And so he went into her cage. And so you see here they are touching each other, and she's calming him down. I'll explain what that means. So it's the last hug between them.
She died a week after that, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we never go into a cage with a chimpanzee, an adult chimpanzee, because they are much stronger than we are. So we never do this. And I think Jan van Hoof, the professor, he was a bit nervous doing this. And that's why Mama, who is really maternal, so that's why she's called Mama, she's calming him down. She's sort of reassuring him that it's all okay. The thing is that this was shown on national TV in the Netherlands. People were very moved by it, but people were also very surprised. They were surprised how human-like the expressions and the gestures of a chimpanzee are. And I was surprised by that because I said, well, we have told you for 50 years that chimpanzees are our closest relative. So why would you be surprised that they have gestures and expressions?
Emotions.
Same as us.
Emotions.
Yeah. Yeah, same emotions, yeah.
So, Fred, in Brazil, we have a primate sanctuary in Sorocaba, São Paulo. It shelters 44 chimps rescued from circus and zoos. And there's the story about Cecilia. Cecilia was a chimp, 20 years old, got the first habeas corpus, the juridical instrument in history that allowed her to be brought from Argentina to the colony in Brazil. Let's see some footage of it.
É a primeira vez que um animal no mundo é libertado por um habeas corpus, porque a justiça da Argentina entendeu que a chimpanzé Cecília não podia mais viver em condições inadequadas no zoológico de Mendoza, na Argentina. Então ela foi trazida para Buenos Aires. Esse processo demorou aí 2 anos na justiça.
É uma conquista muito importante que o projeto GAP busca há vários anos, que reconhece que um chimpanzé tem direitos e que precisam ser respeitados. Além disso, é uma conquista importante também para o direito mundial dos animais, pois pode servir de exemplo para os outros animais que estão em situações de privação de liberdade, de maus tratos no mundo todo.
And here she is today. She shares a... She shares her room or cage, I don't know how to call it, with a male, his boyfriend, her boyfriend. And they're kissing and embracing. She looks happy.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of zoos because I think many people now live in urban areas, also in Brazil. They live in big cities. They lose contact with nature. They have no clue about nature. Even though they may live close to it, they don't go there. And I think zoos have a task to connect people with nature, but that means that it needs to be a good zoo. It needs to be not a zoo with a tiger in a small cage. That's not very useful. They need to show the animals in the best possible way. They need to have fewer species maybe and more space for them. They need to be educational. They need to work on conservation. So they have conservation programs and sometimes reintroductions of animals, if that's possible.
Culture used to be considered a human's exclusive. Do animals have culture? Apes, for instance.
Yeah, they learn from each other. So what is culture? Culture is us. We influence each other and we call that culture. And I think the animals have also culture because they learn from each other. Now, of course, we do a lot of studies in the wild on how they use tools and how they learn to use tools from each other. And sometimes you have a group of chimpanzees that cracks nuts with stones and other groups that have stones and nuts available but don't do anything with them. So and actually nutcracking is also in the capuchin monkeys in Brazil has been observed. These are cultural traditions. So yes, we speak of culture in animals, and that's also why in my book on gender, I talk about gender in chimpanzees and bonobos, because gender is a cultural concept, like how you learn to be a man, how you learn to be a woman.
We'll get to that soon, but first I'd like to show some capuchin monkeys in Piauí, the northeast of Brazil, using rocks in a very smart way.
At Fazenda Boa Vista, capuchins show unusual behaviors. They habitually use heavy stone hammers and anvils to crack open very resistant palm nuts. This behavior takes years of practice to be learned by youngsters. It is a tradition.
That's probably not news for you. You know about the capuchins, but... So as it's been shown that monkeys, humans, and apes, we all go through learning stages in life, is this one of the reasons that the term instinct has become obsolete?
Yeah, we don't talk much about instinct anymore in animals because instinct would suggest that something is purely inborn and not affected by the environment, which is unlikely. There are no behaviors like that. Even in insects, people don't use the term insect not so much and instinct so much anymore. So people sometimes think that you can divide behavior in purely biological and purely cultural, but it's not possible. Everything is always connected. And there are no purely cultural behaviors because culture interacts with us and we are animals. There are no purely natural behaviors because it's always developed in an environment. If you hear a drum in the distance, you cannot decide, is it due to the drummer or the drum that I hear a particular sound? You cannot tease that apart. It is a drummer and a drum always together. And if the sound changes, it may be that the drummer changes or that the drum changes. You don't know. And so that's a bit the discussion of nature and nurture, is you cannot tease it apart. It's always together.
And in their social relations, do apes show a sense of justice?
Yeah, we do experiments on capuchin monkeys, the same monkeys that you just saw.
Yeah, there's a classic experiment.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, so these are two capuchin monkeys, and they perform a simple task. They need to give us a rock. That's what the one on the right is going to do. And it gets a grape for it. The one on the left gets pieces of cucumber. So he's giving a rock, and he gets a piece of cucumber. And you see the reaction there. He doesn't like the cucumber. So if you give both monkeys cucumber, they will do the task without any problems. But if the one gets grape, look at the one on the right, gets a grape again. The one on the left, he gets cucumber again.
He's not happy at all.
No, that's, no.
That's not fair.
Yeah. So what we found is that the capuchin monkeys have a sense of fairness, is that they object to getting less than somebody else. Because a grape is much better than cucumber. Yeah.
And they are doing the same task, actually.
Yeah, and they don't mind if they both get the same thing. If they both get cucumber, they don't mind.
Well, in your latest book, Different Gender Through the Eyes of a Primatologist, that will be published in Brazil next year, it's a fascinating book, and it's so crucially important nowadays, so we can understand lots of discussions that are going on in our society. But so let's start by asking you, what's the difference between gender and sex, and can we apply the term gender to other animals?
Yeah, so sex is the biology. Sex is mostly male-female. There's a little in-between category, but it's mostly defined by genitals, chromosomes, hormones, brains. It's a biological distinction. Gender, I usually don't divide in male and female. I divide it in masculine and feminine, and everything in between is a much more flexible concept. It changes from country to country, from place to place. It is a cultural construct of how you ought to behave, the social norms of how a man or a woman needs to behave in society. And so gender, I think we can apply to other species, the species that learn how to behave over a long time, like the apes. They're very slow in their development and they learn many things too. So it's a difference. The two are always connected. People think sometimes that gender is disconnected from biology. I don't think that's a possibility in our species. So they always remain connected, but sort of loosely.
As the saying goes, genders are cultural codes that sexes use to walk around.
Yeah. So gender is more the cultural overlay And it changes over time. So it changes over time. Sometimes there was a time, for example, in the French nobility, that the man had high heels and wigs.
Wigs.
And perfumes. There was a time like that. Yeah. It's strange, but that existed. Yeah.
When toys are offered to infant chimps, like balls, trucks, dolls, and plush toys, what happens?
Yeah, so the play behavior of the young primates is very different. The young females are very attracted to babies and dolls. And if you give them dolls, they will carry them on their belly, on their back, like a baby. They like to play with dolls. And in the wild, chimpanzee females have been observed to pick up wooden logs and rocks and carry them on them like an infant. So the young females are very attracted to sort of maternity games, and they play that when they're young. The young males are very attracted to wrestling. They like to roughhouse and wrestle and mock fight. And they do that the whole day, which is important for them because they learn not only fighting skills, they also learn how to inhibit their physical strengths, which is very important if they play with someone who's smaller or weaker. So the both sexes, they play games according to their future role in society. The mock fighting and roughhousing of males has been found all over the world, also in boys. Boys do that more than girls, yeah.
And are males capable of maternal care as well?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, is that if you look at chimps and bonobos, you don't see males doing much. It's all female job to carry the babies and care for them and protect them and feed them. And that's all female work. But if a female loses her life, and so all of a sudden there's an orphan who is in need of care because they are dependent for 10 years. So it's a very long time. So then all of a sudden, sometimes a male adopts them. Sometimes the alpha male, some high-ranking males, adult males, adopt these orphans. They put them on their back. They walk around with them. And not just for 2 days. They may do it for 2, 3, 4 years. They have the potential to be very good fathers. And I think that potential is even more developed in our species because our species developed nuclear families, you know, male, female children. That's a typical human pattern. And so our males are even more capable of doing this, I think.
And with the social changes that are happening in the last few decades, this is it's good that we know that we have this potential. It's very...
It's very useful because here in the US, we sometimes have conservative politicians who joke about paternity leave. They say, oh, it's paternity leave. Of course, maternity leaves, they can understand, but not paternity leaves.
In chimpanzees and ape societies in general, is there a hierarchy between males and females?
Yeah, the hierarchies, the social hierarchies are usually segregated. So the males worry about their position among the males. The females, they worry about their position among the females. Women compete with women, men compete with men. And between the sexes, there's actually more cooperation usually than competition.
Then we come to this matter of gender inequality. No one would propose to fight racism by urging people of different races to try to look more alike. So why would we try to get rid of gender? Do you think that's the main misunderstanding between men, women, and other genders nowadays in human societies?
Yeah, the thing is that people have focused on gender as if gender is the problem. And they say we need to be gender neutral. We need to reduce gender. We need to get rid of it. We shouldn't talk so much about it. But, you know, gender will always be business. We always will have men and women, and they are just different, physically different and behaviorally different. So I don't think getting rid of gender is the solution. Getting rid of the inequality, that's an important goal that we should have in society. Human boys, we know that they will be stronger than girls when they're adults. We know they will be more violent because violence is more typical of males than females. This is true for all the primates. It's true for humans as well. So if boys are going to be stronger and more violent, we need to teach them different skills. We need to teach them to be constructive with their strengths rather than destructive and abusive. And so I think raising children gender neutral, I see that as a problem. I think boys and girls are not the same, and we need to take that into account in our education.
And we have also to take into account transgender when they come up. First of all, have you observed transgender apes?
Yeah, we have in our group of chimps, for example, we have a female named Donna, who, when she was very young, she wanted to wrestle with me, which is a typical male behavior. She was only 3 years old already, and wrestle with the adult males in the group. And then when she grew older, she developed the big shoulders and the big head and all the hair that is typical of males. And she started to look like a male, and she started to associate with the males and hang out with them and do things with them. So she became a bit of a male. I cannot ask her identity, but I think she may have identified as a male. And we have the same thing on the other side. We have, for example, big males who could be high ranking, but they are not interested in the macho games. They're not interested in politics. They don't play these games. And so they stay completely out of it. So we have maybe 1 in 10 or 1 in 20 individuals who are exceptional. They act differently than the rest. And in human society, we have that same variability. We have some individuals who are more homosexual than heterosexual. We have some individuals who don't follow the typical gender roles. And we make a big deal about it, but in the other primates, it's not an issue. For example, Donna, that chimpanzee, she was very well accepted in her group. And I've never noticed that individuals who are a bit different from the rest are not accepted. So I think in human society, that's a problem that we have. Is we have the same gender diversity, but we are not very tolerant. We are very normative.
And it's quite common to hear people state that gender is cultural, is an arbitrary social construction. But why does the very existence of transgender people lead us to quite the opposite conclusion?
Yeah, that's interesting, is that we're having sort of the same discussion that we had about homosexuality. Like 20 years ago, people would say homosexuality is a choice. People choose to be homosexual. And now we understand, I think most of us understand, that people are born this way. People are born homosexual, and you're not going to change it. That's how they are. I think with the transgender discussion, we have the same discussion now, is that people say being transgender is a fashion, it's a choice, is they make up these stories about themselves, but that's not true. It starts very early in life, long before puberty, that children say that they are, they're born like a boy, that they say that they're a girl, these things happen. And I think it's also a biological thing, just like homosexuality. It's not something that you can easily change. And you should not try to change it, because you make these people very unlucky, if unhappy if you do that. And so I think we need to work on acceptance rather than changing things.
Is there any physical evidence in transgender people's brains that can help us to understand why they are transgender?
Yeah, there's a Dutch neuroscientist, Dick Swaap, who has found a small part in the brain, in the human brain, that is different between the sexes. And in transgender people, it corresponds more with the sex that they say that they are. So let's say you have someone born as a male who says he's a woman. And so in his brain, we can already see that he is more like a woman in his brain. And so, yeah, there's a biological basis probably for it. It's not entirely sure, but there's probably a biological basis. I'm not a neuroscientist, but that during pregnancy, the fetus develops the genital differentiation male-female first, and the brain differentiation male-female second, and that in some individuals, a small minority of individuals, these two processes get disconnected. And so the genitals go one way, the brain goes another way, and that's how you get transgender people. That doesn't mean that we know why this happens or how exactly this happens, but it's a theory about the biological basis of this.
Why do you think so many social scientists up to now, 21st century, still insist to deny such a thing as human nature?
Yeah, Yeah, I don't know, but I look at humans, of course, as animals, and I think we are not more or less dependent on culture than other species, I think. I think we are very smart animals. I don't deny that we are special in our intellectual capacities and our language abilities. But humans are biological beings. And it is a problem. It's philosophy and religion that has given us this dividing line, and that say they say that soul humans are...
Body yeah. and soul, yeah.
Yeah, body and soul. Humans are special. Humans are different. We are sort of separate from nature. And this has created an enormous amount of problems. Look at the climate crisis. Look at the COVID crisis. It's all a product of our arrogance, thinking that we are outside of nature. We can do whatever we want and it's going to be fine. We can eat bats and it's going to be okay. We can destroy the oceans and it's going to be fine. And I think we need a totally different way of thinking. We are animals on this planet together with other animals. And we better get our act together, because otherwise we're going to go under this way.
We're coming to a close. But you mentioned earlier that boys, they mock fight between each other because they have to learn how strong they are to control their yeah. strength. But after we grow up, men keep this pattern of always testing each other, trying to gain the upper hand. Does that mean that humans are damned to war amongst themselves?
No, I don't think so, because I've made a lot of studies of reconciliation behavior, and actually men are very good at it, and male chimps are very good at it. So yes, they have tensions and competitions, but they also are capable of maintaining friendships despite all these competitions. And I think, warfare is such a complex issue. But you know, before the agricultural revolution, we have no evidence that we were at war with each other. And if you look at hunter-gatherers, people who live from before the agricultural revolution, they not all of them, some of them have warfare, but most of them don't. And so we need to take into account that maybe going to war is not such a natural condition for us, is maybe not something that we have always done. And if we look at our two closest relatives, chimpanzees and bonobos, chimpanzees are territorial. They're a bit like us in that regard. But bonobos, which are equally close, they are not territorial. The groups meet and they mingle and they groom and they play and then they separate again. So we have in our lineage, not everybody was a warrior like us. And so we need to take that into account.
We have to pay attention to our bonobo side.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Deval. Thank you, Franz.
Thank you, Pedro.
Bom, a conversa deve ter estimulado você a ler os livros de Franz Deval. Leia os traduzidos, espero que está sendo traduzido. Não perca essa oportunidade. Até a próxima. Ficou curioso para ver as imagens do programa? Entre no Globoplay. Até a próxima.